Welcome back, guys, to your A-List Lowdown coming at you August 5th already. Already August 5th, 2025. With Out With Women and Some Resilience in quotation marks. Which I don't know. I did take a guess before we started recording on what that might be, but was not able to get it. So that'll be a surprise.
It's a bit of a deconstruction on like, oh, the elbows up crowd are all excited about stuff. And when you really look into it, you're like, oh my God, fuck. It's just propaganda is flying high right now. It's unbelievable.
Do you know what mine is?
No, I have no idea what yours is. Out With Women.
There you have it. Double surprise show. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, comment. We're pretty close to getting monetized. I think within like 3 or 4 subscribers. And like 12 hours of watch hours. I mean, we got monetized for super chats and stuff like that, but then we'll get paid for watch time. So we'll see if we'll finally find out if the show is worth doing. Spoiler alert. I mean, Parliament will be back soon. That'll probably make it a little better. But we're in the dog days of summer. We're in the dog days of summer. Do you want to, why don't we just, you know, I'll jump into my, whoops, what did I do? I'll jump into mine right off the bat and we can get going. I do have some other stuff that might be a little dated because we didn't do a show last week, but we did do a show early in the week, but not later in the week. But I think it's worth doing anyway. So, I mean, the thing is you just start to see it everywhere, right?
Yeah, it's good to just document some of the stuff, even if it's not like a day old, you know, it's just... A week old is fine.
So this is from the Hill Times, whatever that is. It's being leveled. Advocates worried about potential 81% cut to women and gender equality, Canada's budget by 2028. Now, I'm not saying that I disagree with this, but I just think it's funny. This actually would tie into your Some Resilience in the Elbows Up crowd, because there's probably a lot of women in the Elbows Up crowd in the government that figured it would protect their jobs.
What is it? It's saying what? There's something about equality?
Yeah, so we'll get into the article. Women's advocates called the department's 3-year forecast extremely shocking and disproportional for the small ministry. The level of support will be radically reduced, says Catherine Scott, who isn't holding her breath for the fall budget. Oh, no. What is this? I thought I had a... I signed up for the... post, I thought.
I thought you were a political insider already.
Is this a different one then? This is a different one.
Yeah, does that mean you don't even have access to your headline story here?
Let's see.
Oh, it's Canadian politics, this one too.
Yeah. For some reason, I thought this was a subsidiary of the National Post, which I did sign up for. For this exact reason. So let me see now. Sometimes you can do some, I know some workarounds that might work here. Let me see if this works. No, that didn't work either.
I mean, I just don't even understand the title here. Like, cut to women and gender equality, a cut, 81% cut to women and gender equality, Canada's budget. Like, what is... What even needs to be cut here?
I'm trying to see if I can backdoor my way into this without paying them money. Here we go. We'll do this one instead. Potential cuts to Women and Gender Equality Canada could take us back to the Harper days. Now, the main reason I brought this is because it's just more evidence that Carney's more of a conservative than he lets on. It may be more of a conservative than Pierre, which is the sad state of Canadian politics when it comes to opposition. On April 28th, women voters delivered a major victory for the Liberal Party, turning around the electoral fortunes of a party that had been trailing its major opponent by 25 points in the year leading up to the election.
I was thinking about that today. I'm like, sometimes I can't believe that we're in this spot again.
The Liberals succeeded despite only a cursory discussion of gender equality in the Liberal platform, as the Liberals forcefully sought to distance themselves from the Trudeau record. And despite the removal of Minister for Women and Gender Equality, WAGE from cabinet in March when Mark Carney was elected Liberal leader, a decision that he walked back after the general election in the face of protest. Questions continue to linger about the new government's commitment to gender equality. What's the status of the National Action Plan to End Gender-Based Violence? Where's the new Employment Equity Act? What's being done to bolster the capacity of gender equality organizations confronting an increasingly violent anti-feminist backlash? Have you heard about this increasingly violent anti-feminist backlash?
Full of hate words?
The answer is not.
Online hate words? I mean, what is this violence?
Something tells me they're not going to tell us. The answer is not much, according to the new 2025-26 departmental plan. In fact, with the conclusion of current funding programs, Wage Canada's budget is set to decline by a whopping 80% between 24-25 and 27-28, a much larger cut than the 15% identified in the new finance minister's campaign. So here's how much money they've been dumping into the Women and Gender Equality Canada. So this is in millions of dollars, 14, 15, you know, you're 39 million, 38 million, 45 million. By 2019-2020 budget, you're up to 138 million. And by 2025-26, you're up to $400 million, almost a half a billion. So then they cut that by 80%, which would get you back down to 80 million. Which would be, you know, still double what you were spending 10 years ago.
And it's the type of thing, it reminds me of the DEI stuff, where these companies are just now, they're still practicing DEI. They're just not labeling it, because this is the, it seems to me like, I mean, I haven't looked into this, but shouldn't things just be fair and equal and run that way? Why do you need a department to focus on gender equity? Like, it should just be fair and equal.
It costs money.
Like, women's programs are different.
You need $500 million to help hire. In the Liberal platform, the government promised to increase support for the Women's Economic and Leadership Opportunities Funds, but the funds for the women's program could fall by over 90% from $226 million to $18.9 million. So here again, you can see where, for some reason, you're $29 million, $26 million in 2017, $30 million in 2018, 2019. And then it's 65 million, 95 million, 173 million, 226.
Oh my God, man. Those are huge increases. I mean, I don't think there would be anything wrong if you just kept it at that other, like the 30 million or whatever. Okay. You know, there's
what we're going back to. And that's basically what we're going back to. And everyone's up in ours.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's 18.929. So you cut it by 30%. So here's the grants. You know, where you're down here. Look at this one. I mean, almost nothing until boom, boom. Up to 220 million on this one and 200 million on that one. I mean, that's two different programs.
And you wonder if it's even just, if it's money long, if it's even legit. That's what, all these types of things now. I just don't have any faith in any of it.
If these cuts are implemented, the women's movement will be thrown back to the wrenching Harper years when then Minister of Status for Women Canada, Bev Oda, famously excised the word equality from the agency's mandate, arguing it wasn't needed anymore. She wasn't.
Wow.
Funding for the women's program is actually forecast to be 36.5% lower in 27-28 than it was in 24-2015.
See, she was saying they won. They've got their equality now. We can end the slush programs.
Funding for the Equality for Sex, Sexual Orientation, Gender Identity and Expression program, which includes transfers to the provinces and territories, effectively falls to zero by 27-28. The dedicated GBV funding stream, in addition to support offered through the women's program, will fall to 10.7 million at the same time.
So can I ask a really stupid question? Just where are these drops coming from if there's no budget or anything? Like, I don't understand how.
I can't answer that. I'd be just making stuff up. So here again, you have your gender equality, advancing gender equality programs, and your SWC wage budget. 24-2015, these things are down at 0.01% as a percentage of federal budget, percentage of total federal spending. 24-15, 24-16, you're at 0.01%, and then you get up to 0.08, so almost 0.1 almost 1/100th of the budget to this crap by this year. Anyway.
So you're just a misogynist.
I guess I am. Yeah, it could be. That could, that could be the case. That would explain.
So that's your title?
Yeah, they seem to. But it's not, it's a little misleading because they're not actually, will this result in less women getting hired? I don't know. Why do they need $500 million to help hire women? Is it they don't need them? But they don't need them, but they need an extra 3,000 women just to hit the numbers. So they just hire them. We need money to pay these women so we could say we're doing it. I don't know. Here, I'll do another one. Let's jump over to this one. This is kind of funny one. Our buddy Table Salt. New youth unemployment reaches all-time high in Ontario. The CBDC blames it on, quote, "We could spend hours debating the cause." They can't say it. They literally can't say we brought in 3.09 million people in 2 years.
Is that the 54,000 people in the summer thing, in the summer job fair?
I think so, yeah.
When you look at 1 in 10 in this people in the city looking for work, 54,000 people applying for 5,000 jobs at the CNE, what's driving these unemployment rates?
There is so much. Like, we could spend hours talking about what this, what the source of all of this is. I think the biggest things that we're seeing is a fundamental shift.
Do you think we need to spend hours talking about
it? I can't even listen to this. It's infuriating. Just right there, her voice, the way she's talking about it, it's just gross.
In what?
Do you think that we need to spend hours talking about the different causes for this?
I think we need about 30 seconds.
The labor needs are. We've got a booming generation of Gen Z. We've got so many young people freshly graduated looking for work. And we're also seeing folks aren't retiring and stepping out of the workforce as quickly because the economy is so challenging. And then we look at some of those larger macro and microeconomic trends. It's really impacting the volume at which organizations can hire. So a lot of different factors here. What this boils down to is ultimately more job seekers than jobs available, which is leading to doubling, tripling, and sometimes even higher kind of rates of increase of how many applications we're getting it for every single open role.
They didn't even mention the one that I would assume you would explain away within 30 seconds.
And she's a career coach. She should be right on top of all this stuff. So here's one, just on that subject, I was going to clip it and I didn't clip it, but Clyde do something, or no, it was Moose on the Loose had one of these. It was about the applications for the temporary foreign workers, right? So one of these young kids offed himself because he ended up finding out that he got this job and then he got let go, or he didn't get a job because somebody, one of these temporary foreign workers came in and took the job away or something. But he had applied for so many of these things, like hundreds of these things, right? And it reminds me of the kids that I know here and stuff. And I never really thought about it like this, but there's a lot of these jobs that aren't even real jobs, right? They're not even real openings. They're just a job posting that has to look like a real opening so that they can bring in these subsidized workers. So the companies have, so kids are applying to all these jobs that they think are openings when they're not really openings. Not, at least not for somebody who lives here, who's a citizen. So imagine being a kid, I couldn't imagine this growing up and sending your resume to hundreds of places. You never get a call back at all. Nobody even acknowledges that you've applied for hundreds of jobs. And then they hire somebody, and they get subsidized by the government, the taxpayers' money to take your position. I mean, unbelievable.
Oh, you didn't even have to, wasn't that thing we were reading last week said you didn't even really have to do that anymore? There's a bunch of loopholes where you don't even have to pretend you're trying to hire someone anymore. You can just do it.
I think maybe.
But it's by industry, I think. So no clip for that, though?
No.
Well, here's this is a local one, semi-local to me, not too far away. Edmonton, I think. Oh, no, Calgary. So 11-year-old boy robs bus driver at knife point.
No, what?
11. Can you imagine? Police in Calgary say an 11-year-old boy armed with a knife robbed a bus driver at Earlton Station on Tuesday, July 29th. Around 11:45 p.m., the boy allegedly demanded the driver's phone and left with cash, joining two other youths aged 12 and 14. The group was found near 25th Avenue Southwest and McLeod Trail and taken into custody. Investigators believe they were also linked to a liquor store robbery earlier that evening. The 11-year-old was released to a parent, and those under 12 cannot face charges. A 14-year-old girl faced with shoplifting and other charges, with charges pending for a 16-year-old.
You know, this is because they're learning that you just get away with crime, right? There's nothing happens. You could do anything and they won't do anything to you.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, right? Pretty wild. All right, let's jump over here quick. To the National Post, from killings to rape, the heinous crimes that could get you less time in jail than a freedom convoy organizer. You can commit some extremely violent crimes in Canada without the Crown seeking a sentence as harsh as what they're requesting for Tamara Leach. Yeah, I get upset because I have an ad blocker on. Last week, Crown prosecutors announced they were seeking jail sentences of up to 8 years for Tamara Leach and Chris Barber, two organizers of the Freedom Convoy protest. Both were convicted of mischief, but the Crown
is mass mischief.
But the Crown is seeking a minimum sentence of 7 years in jail for Leach and 8 for Barber, who was also found guilty of counseling others to disobey a court order. The Crown has argued that the disruptiveness of the Freedom Convoy blockades warrants the harsh sentence, but in a statement this week, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre said courts are throwing the book at Barber and Leach while simultaneously giving free rein to rampant violent offenders and anti-Semitic rioters. So we could go through a few of them. Sexually assaulting a baby. The accused can't be named due to a publication ban, but he's a BC man convicted of sexually assaulting his 1-year-old daughter. Specifically, he rubbed his penis against the child's exposed genitals while filming it on his cell phone. In March, Crown prosecutors sought 5 to 6 years for the man's conviction for sexual assault, possession of child pornography, and sexual interference with a minor. Using a car filled with guns to ram into Justin Trudeau's house. I didn't even hear about this, did you? Defense lawyers for Barber and Leach have argued that the pair were active in keeping Freedom Convoy peaceful and blah, blah, blah. Months before the Freedom Convoy got underway, an Army reservist angry about COVID lockdowns filled up a car with guns, smashed through the gates of the official prime ministerial residence, and was stopped as he attempted to approach the residence to arrest then Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. The reservist crimes were much, much more serious than mischief. He was convicted of 7 weapon charges and 1 charge of destruction of property. The Crown in this case sought a sentence of 6 years. I mean, no kidding, they didn't tell us about that. They must have been worried that would get people riled up. Killing multiple people, innocent people via drunk driving. When it comes to crimes that kill people, vehicular manslaughter is routinely among the most lightly punished. There exist any number of examples of Canadian driver killing someone through inattention, recklessness, and getting off with nothing more than a fine and a brief driving ban. Edmonton man Taylor Yamachuk killed a senior couple while driving drunk in 2022. The Crown in this case sought and received a 5-year jail sentence. 5 years was also the sentence sought by the Crown in the case of a Newfoundland man who took the wheel after drinking all day at a 2019 music festival, causing a crash that killed couple John and Sandra Lush and seriously injured their daughter and boyfriend who were in the back seat. Stabbing a man to death because he told you to stop abusing your girlfriend. In 2018, 26-year-old Abil Ngusi Abera received fatal stab wounds in downtown Vancouver after he attempted to intervene between a man yelling at his common-law spouse. At a hearing last month, Crown prosecutors sought a 5-year term. Being a police officer who stalks and sexually harasses crime victims, the Crown sought 2 to 3 years. amassing enough child pornography to fill a video store. The Crown sought a 3 to 3.5 year sentence, and he was sentenced to 2. Torturing a toddler to death. The Crown would end up seeking the exact same sentence for the parents that is being sought for Barber, 8 years in jail. Shooting at police. Ahmadi ultimately received just 4 years in addition to a $1,000 fine because he was also drinking and driving. Intentionally ramming a car loaded with children and pregnant women, sentenced to 5 years. Beating a fellow homeless shelter resident to death. Jag was convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to 5 years. Raping a minor and bragging about it online. The judge went with 3 years and 3 months. So that's just sort of an expansion on what we were going through last week with some of that stuff.
I was asking for help on finding a quote that's been going around lately about this kind of justice system, not the two-tiered system, which is quite obvious, but Nietzsche, I found one from Nietzsche. It says, there's a point in the history of society when it becomes so pathologically soft and tender that, among other things, it sides with those who harm it, criminals, and does this quite seriously and honestly.
Oh, wow. Timmy Bush gifted 10 A-list propaganda memberships. I don't know how that works. Does that mean we could just give them to people somehow? I don't know how to do that. Oops.
Thanks, Timmy Bush.
Thanks, Timmy Bush. We'll figure out how to do that, and we'll give all the people. There's only like 10 people that are active here, so they can all be members now.
Yeah, I was looking for that quote. I can't find it. So,
all right. Do you want to take a turn?
Yeah. So let's go to my headline here, because this is this kind of shows what's going on here. Let's see. So this is Jiggly news here. This will infuriate Maple MAGA, right? So all this headlines going around. I've got a cough or something's going on, so I'm gonna try not to cough. But I've been trying to mute myself and clear my throat here, but.
Been a little messed up. I think it's from I think that's like all the pollen and shit. I've always got allergy problems, but they've seemed heightened the last like 3 weeks with all the rain. Yeah, like, I almost feel them getting worse when it rains.
So here's this post from Jiggly News here. This will infuriate Maple MAGA. Canada's economy is showing resilience against UF's tariffs. Why? And then there's a link here. And then Julie here is like, yep, that's the talking point, propaganda. What it really means, Canada's holding on for dear life and running out of options as their economy is getting crushed. So this is the pleb reporter saying the Canadian media are all pushing the same BS story again. Now, this is what propaganda looks like. So just to give you an idea, it's hard to believe that this is still going on, but here we go. The same headline, Toronto Sun, CTV News, there's CP24, which I'm gonna read through. Toronto Star, it's all this exact same thing. National Post, CBC, like they've got their fucking papers and they're gonna propagandize us. Of course, people are catching on to it. Funny how MAGA echo Trump's stupidity, yet their own economy is shrinking, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, it reminds me of this before I go into this, this one was also, what a badass move by Canada, not folding to Trump pressure and exposing U.S. economy. Exactly. I see this one going around a lot. Like, what does that even mean? Do you understand what they're saying? I'm like, is that sarcastic? Like, what's wrong? You're worried about the U.S. economy right now? Really? I mean.
I don't get it.
Didn't they actually have a surplus? I mean, it seems to be working, to be honest with you, depending on who you talk to. But so well, here's
can't be worse.
Can't be worse than ours. So here's the article. Okay. This is where the headline comes from. Okay. Remember this headline. It's showing resilience against the tariffs, right? Ottawa, some resilience. Those were the two words of Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem used last week to describe how the Canadian economy is holding up under the weight of U.S. tariffs. So right off the bat, some resilience is not showing resilience, right? With tariffs piling up over the past few months, economists say Canada's economy is starting to show cracks, but few signs of collapse. All right. Oh, we're good. Avoiding what?
I said, oh, goody, not collapse.
Yeah.
It's not the worst case scenario.
And they're like, yeah, we are avoiding the worst case scenario. All right. So this is already not turning out to what the fucking headline that was shared all over Canadian media. Here's the subtitle. What are tariffs doing to the economy? I'm just going to skip through some of it. If those early readings pan out, StatCan said it would be good enough for flat growth overall on the quarter. All right. Also, we got flat growth. It's still hard to pinpoint exact impacts tied to tariffs, Urquhart said, but a broad trend is emerging. What we can say over the last 6 months or so is that economic activity is somewhat flatlining, he said. So I guess now resilience is flatlining. Now we go to, will Canada hit a recession? Will we hit a recession?
Does that mean we're running out of resilience?
Does that mean we haven't been in one, I guess, right? Not officially. Some other forecasters continue to pencil a tariff-induced recession into their outlook. So is that, I guess that's not resilient enough to avoid a recession if some people are predicting it. I mean, they've got a bunch of quotes here. I don't want to go through all of them here. Canada avoids a recession in that outcome. Growth in 2025, 2026 remains overall positive, but half a percentage point lower than it would have been without the weight of tariffs. So it's not really making a difference. I mean, it's just disgusting. I mean, then we've got, you know, I mean, we've got other stuff to sort of share on that, you know, on that kind of stuff with it, unemployment. And there's a couple things here, like Marty up north posted. Some of this is old too, which I wanted, but I've been saving it up. You know, 21.4 million Canadians are working as of June. That's less than half the population. Only 30% are net tax contributors. Orange is the private sector right here. There's that drop during, you know what. Blue is government. Of course, that's going up. And green is self-employed.
Which kind of would be ideal in some ways if only half the population was working.
You can clearly see the impact of major recessions and COVID on the private sector in the last 50 years. Government employees have guaranteed safe jobs, which is why they should be paid less than the private sector, a lot less. Government work is job security versus performance. So, I mean, that's not really what I wanted to show, you know, too much, but I wanted to get that out of the way here. There was another one from
because in a good economy, ideally you'd have even less than half the population working, probably, right? Where you'd have a lot of like households that were single income.
Yeah. So let's go with
here where it's like all those other people are on some sort of government dole because it's almost impossible to get by in a single income.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's, I was looking for one and they were talking about the, I can't remember now. So I will go to this example of government workers. Speaking of Marty's thing on government workers here, let me just find it quickly. Did I get rid of it? This is gonna annoy you. Have you seen this one from Table Salt? Have you seen all the controversy over the Canada Post workers? Because if they finish their route in 6 hours, they get paid for 8, right? But then they'll be offered to get another 2 hours of overtime in there if they stay. So then they work 8 hours and get paid 2 hours overtime. That's what's going around. I mean, I haven't fact-checked that, but that's what's going around. So here's Table Salt. This is what happens when you go home after finishing your route in 4 hours and get paid for 8 hours anyway. Gets caught putting "we missed you" sticker, but didn't even load parcel on his truck. So this is the guy who's videotaped this. Are you ready? This guy's like, he's a gem. I mean, he's super calm. He's just the nicest guy. I would have lost it.
You got my parcel? Whoa.
I'm gonna just comment on this because the dog's barking and stuff. He says, "Whoa, I pay for home delivery." So this chap pays $50 to get this Canada Post to deliver it to his door, right? And it needs signing for. So he's got signs on his door that says, "I'm home. I want to sign for this. I'm home." And she's walking up, not with the parcel, because the parcel's somewhere else. It's with the slip that says, "We missed you.
For a home delivery."
He's just going to close the door on the
truck.
So he's like, "Is it in the truck?" She's like, "No, it's already on North Street."
But no.
to come over it.
I know, but you need a signature.
Right. And I'm here to sign.
I can bring it for you later.
That would be fantastic.
So he's like, and I'm here to sign for it. She's like, we can't deliver it. I'm here to sign for it. So she offers to deliver it later. He's like, that would be fantastic. Every time we order,
we want it brought to the house. That's why we pay $50 shipping. It really costs $50. No, it's just, yes. The company charges us $50 to ship it to us. That's why we pay for it.
Holy. This is a government worker realizing.
To the house. Not, and you've seen the signs on previous. I was right on the other side of the door, but I didn't hear you. So I waited today.
Oh, did you?
Yes, we have it all on record every time you've done this. And there's no construction. Okay. Right?
I knew that.
No construction?
Yes. This one just needs the signature.
I'm sorry.
So she's saying, you know, this one just needs a signature. That's all. And he's like, I'm here to sign. Like, there's signs on the door. I'm home. So for some reason, they just don't want to, I don't know, like, it's like, maybe they want to leave the slip so then it goes back to the post office, right? So they don't have to wait at the door and try and, like, go up to somebody's door and wait, I guess, right? Then you got to go pick it up at the office, right? Is that the deal?
Then you can't get off early. Yeah, then you have to go to the office. I mean, I have to go to the office because the government wants an extra $10 on some books I ordered.
Right.
So it's like $10 delivery. Now they want $10 more on import fees.
Really?
Yeah, just for 5 little books of Unlearned. You know, they're like, you know, they're fucking like worth like a couple bucks each wholesale. They're really... It cost barely anything to get them here. It costs $3 to deliver them anywhere in the States.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And then there's import fees. So tariffs, right, on books you're buying from the States. So thanks, Canada.
This one just needs the signature.
I'm sorry.
I
put signs up. I'm here to sign for it.
Did you? You can tell the one who had a number, too.
I do, and they tell me there was construction in the area.
There's no construction in the area.
For the last month, we've been getting that every time we complain.
Oh, really?
Construction.
We have
so this poor guy has complained over and over, and they're still not delivering it to him. I mean, you would think after that amount of complaints, they'd be like, okay, make sure you go to the guy's house, please. They've been calling and complaining.
300 Halifax North for construction.
That's 300 Halifax.
Yeah,
we're at
119. What, 119.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you bringing it later today?
We'll see how it goes with
this. What about next time?
So all of a sudden she might not be able to bring it later today. What about next time, he says?
Well, we'll bring it as soon as, if you're home, we will bring it.
That's why I put up sign saying, I'm home.
Okay.
You just have to, or this button.
Hit this button, the doorbell, ring the doorbell.
Either one, that'll get me to the door.
Thank you.
It's unbelievable, right? And then just here's another example here. About the government and economies, right? So this is Stephen Gordon. He says, let me try and explain what growing an economy in simple terms is. I bought a business in Victoria. It's a small micro loft, 320 square feet. So what's that? Like 10 by, would be 16 by 10? Let's say 15 by 15 or something, right? Overlooking the Inner Harbor. So it was zoned to be able to rent out as a short-term rental. I paid my property taxes, license fees. It was a thriving business supplementing my retirement income. I hired a manager to look after it and was responsible for the bookings and running the business. She, in turn, hired cleaners and maintenance people. I paid GST and provincial taxes. Tourists from all over the world came and stayed in our unit. We recommended all kinds of activities for them to enjoy. In fact, we arranged with local businesses discounts for our guests. Then one day, without warning, the provincial government took our rights away, apparently because of housing and affordable rental shortage. Well, the government didn't take into account, these units were too small for families or even couples to rent over a long period. Our business suffered, and suddenly we were unable to rent our unit. The government demonized us, saying that we were greedy landlords. That was the furthest from the truth. All we were trying to do was supplement our income as we are retired. So when the government uses phrases as we are the engine for the economy, this is such nonsense. We have been robbed of our investment. Welcome to all investors in real estate in BC or much of Canada, been effed. I have a friend who has invested properties in the same area, like the Janion, same situation. It is what it is, and the government is not your friend. The moment they can demonize the wealthy. So Yeah, just a couple interesting ones. I mean, maybe we should play a couple of clips from David Eby and see what he's saying here. It's not about that specifically, but I have these saved. Let's see what he says. We are growing our economy.
The product that we produce here and the way in which it's produced gives it a carbon footprint that is among the lowest in the world, 60% better than the average and 40% better than the best plants in the world. And that it means a great deal. In countries that are committed to reducing their carbon footprint, we're displacing higher carbon LNG that they would buy from elsewhere. It means they're able to meet their carbon emissions. And the best part is we're price competitive because it doesn't have to go through the Panama Canal, because we're much closer to Asia. We're able to deliver a better product that's lower carbon, that's cost competitive, and that's reliable. And that's why they're interested. And that's part of the solution and part of the response that British Columbia can offer, because we believe as well that here in BC, we've got to lower our carbon footprint. And we want to be supporters of governments around the world that see the responsibility to address climate change.
It's hard to believe that we're still living through this carbon footprint climate change thing. The U.S. government seems to have pushed back pretty hard against it. Something, did you see something that came out with, I think it was from the Department of Energy or NASA, basically admitting that it's all a big scam? I should have quoted it. So let's play this one from David Eby too here.
Eby, not Sharon.
Were you hearing it?
No.
Eby, is it Abby or Eby? Eby?
Yeah, I think.
I'm announcing a second call for power, an additional 5,000 gigawatts of clean energy that we're calling for to be produced here in British Columbia, enough to power 500,000 homes, as well as major industrial projects across the province. It is an economic driver in every corner of British Columbia for communities right across this beautiful province of ours. And it's a reflection of two things. One is our commitment to grow our economy, to ensure that we're standing strong as British Columbians, we're relying on our advantages, and we're supporting growth in the industries in which we're strong. And the second is that we believe that climate change is real. That we understand that
he's got to say it. He couldn't just keep it in growth mode. I mean, it would sound great if you're trying to grow. That's great. You're trying to grow things and increase your industry and keep it, you know, clean energy, whatever that means to you today might be different tomorrow.
We have a role to play here in British Columbia in driving down emissions, and clean electricity is the way that we're going to do it. And we're going to address climate change at the same time as we're growing our economy. And I couldn't help but notice the president of the United States, Donald Trump, saying that he doesn't like those windmills that produce electricity. They interfere with the views from his golf courses. Let me tell
you. I mean, this is just another thing that it's another feather in the cap of Trump. I mean, it's the only president that's willing to say that out loud to the world.
To all American clean energy producers, come relocate to British Columbia. We are the clean energy capital of the world. We're going to do it.
What are they? What kind of clean energy are you talking about?
It's
got to be dams, right?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he's talking about making more dams. I mean, they've got dams as their main producer of electrical energy, but I don't think he's talking about more. I mean, those aren't clean anyways, are they? I mean, depending on who you talk to, weren't the environmental? Why did it take 20 years, 25 years to get the one made in northern BC there, the Site C project? There were so many.
It's not ready yet.
It's not even ready yet.
Creating energy. We're supportive of clean energy, and we will continue to be so. You can join the amazing more than 700 medical professionals that have applied to join our health service from the United States. And we welcome you, and you are welcome here.
All right. Good job, David Eby. I mean, it sounds good if you're trying to really.
In 2018, hydro plus small amounts of biomass supplied 97.9% of BC's total electricity.
Yeah.
Hydro alone making up 88%. That's great if you have a bunch of giant rivers. We don't have that here. I'm not into damming the bow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Kyle Kemper. Here's Justin Trudeau's half brother. Are windmills a good investment? Yes. 1.7%. No, 93.8%. Friends of Science. Oh, we should. Am I following them? Yeah. Meanwhile, you were importing electricity from the U.S. so that you don't go to blackout. Oh, I didn't know that. For the better part of two decades, Canada has exported significantly more electricity to the U.S. than it imported. However, in the fall of 2023, the electricity trade between the two countries became more balanced. The shift was due partly to Canada's reduced hydropower generation, the country's primary source of electrical generation, as drought conditions reduced inflow to reservoirs in Western Canada. In addition, lower natural gas prices in the U.S. reduced power prices, making U.S. electricity more competitive. So this is trade from the United States to Canada, and then there's electricity from Canada to the U.S. Interesting. Oh, yeah, it did shift there, right? It went down quite a bit, 2023, and then up a little bit there that way. I don't know if it's to do. I mean, I've never heard of BC having brown. Oh, or did I? But we were having electrical problems when I was in BC last winter, remember? We had the power outages. And
did it actually go out?
It did, yeah.
It didn't actually go out here. They just talked about it. Comprehensive list of major blackouts and brownouts in BC. 1996, it was all of Western North America. 2006 was a devastating windstorm. 2015, South Coast blackout, extreme drought. 2018, December windstorm. 2024 is a record outage year. In 2024, BC Hydro experienced the highest ever number of weather-related power interruptions. Over 1.4 million customers, about three quarters of the province, lost power at least once, primarily due to three major late fall storms hitting South Coast and Vancouver Island. In early December alone, storms caused outages among 320,000 customers. Which that doesn't sound like it was because of BC. It seems like it was more to do with the storms.
Here's another quick share here.
Oh wait, it is because the windstorms exacerbated the drought, so there wasn't enough water to keep them dams rolling.
Huh. Interesting. But Site C, that dam is still that was in BC, right? Or was it Alberta? BC, right? Northern BC?
It's in BC by Fort St. John.
So here's household debt as a share of GDP. Canada leading the race. That's pretty good. 103%. And the UK underneath it, oh, this Commonwealth country is doing pretty good. Where's Australia? Oh, it's not even on the list.
Looks like
US is so high up there, actually.
Looks like Site C is 90%. The reservoir is full now.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got four of the units operational. So Site C is already producing power.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
How long was that being planned for? 30 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Three decades to get electricity built? Is that clean? Is that what David Eby calls clean? Is that what he's...
Yeah, public access to the reservoir is restricted until at least spring 2026.
So did they do calculations with all the concrete and all the steel and to actually like make it clean? Or did they just call it clean because they can right now?
Yeah, I wonder if they put in fish ladders and stuff like that. Or if they do those sorts of tests. Well, I got one more here. I'm going to jump, get this out of the way. It's just sort of a funny one, really. Another elbows up one. Carney says Canada's still among the lowest in the average after the U.S. tariffs, Trump's 35% hike on tariffs. So Prime Minister Mark Carney says he is disappointed by the U.S. decision to raise tariffs on Canada, but that Canada retains one of the lowest average tariff rates globally due to many products being exempt under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Isn't that over this year, though?
Not next year. It's July or August 2026.
Well, the government is disappointed by this action we made committed to CUSMA and USMCA, which is the world's second largest free trade agreement by trading volume. The United States raised tariffs on Canada from 25% to 35% beginning August 1st, citing the issue of illicit drugs like fentanyl flowing over the border and Ottawa having failed to cooperate to curb it. Washington also cited Canada's retaliatory measures. However, Carney said sectors like lumber, steel, aluminum, and automobiles are heavily impacted by tariffs. The United States has also levied 50% tariffs on steel and aluminum, 25% tariffs on automobiles and auto parts, and 10% tariffs on oil and potash. For such sectors, the Canadian government will act to protect Canadian jobs, invest in our industrial competitiveness, and buy Canadian and diversify our export markets. Oh, and they're still just saying, when the Prime Minister says, when it comes to fentanyl, Canada counts just 1% of imports of the drug into the United States.
They're still using that bogus stat, eh?
Yeah, and has been working intensively to further reduce these volumes. We will continue working with the United States to stop the scourge of fentanyl. Washington said in its July 31st tariff announcement that Mexican cartels are increasingly synthesizing fentanyl in Canada, that super labs are operating in Western Canada, and fentanyl seizures at the northern border have surpassed total seizures of the past 3 years combined. So there you have it. We can give ourselves more than any foreign government can ever take away by building with Canadian workers and by using Canadian resources to benefit all Canadians. Just now? You're just starting that now?
Yeah, it's frustrating. All right. Well, I've got a pretty big one here that I've been looking forward to doing. I thought she had two of them. Remember I kind of teased it last time about Candace Malcolm's deconstruction of the CBC stuff. I thought there was another one and I looked through it and I couldn't find it. And then I thought maybe she was like referencing halfway down this one. She reposted it. And I think it's all part of this thread, but this is what we need to do. I tried to kind of do it with that last little story that we had there, you know, just to show the headlines versus what's in the story. But this is a great little deconstruction here. So Canada's state broadcaster is a propaganda machine. Every news article is pure one-sided activism with the simple goal of promoting the Liberal government's narrative. But their latest anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-free speech smear campaign has backfired. So let's go into this here. Last week, they teamed up with Liberal MP to demonize a little-known American Christian rock singer and church leader named Sean Fuchs. It's a routine drive-by smear that has become commonplace from the state broadcaster.
Reminds me of Tobias Fünke.
From
Arrested Development.
Residents want MAGA musicians concert at Parks Canada historic site canceled. So they claim Fünke is MAGA, as if he's on a political tour promoting President Trump. He isn't. He's a Christian singer and worship leader who leads church services. He also happens to be a Republican, which makes him guilty of sin, according to the state media. CBC Journalism, they interview three local residents who all parrot the same concerns, no doubt because the Liberal MP and CBC told them to. Otherwise, why would they care if a local church was hosting a service in the park with an American guest preacher? What I want to know is how this got approved in the first place, said Larry Stewart, who lives in Ferguson's Cove, a small community next to the historical site. Stewart is one of several residents who have voiced opposition to the planned concert, which they said goes against Park Canada's guiding principles of inclusion and safety for all visitors.
Wait, what?
it goes against Parks Canada guiding principles. As if a local resident just happens to say that. Inclusion and safety.
Wouldn't inclusion be letting the Christians in?
No, because the Christians aren't inclusive of the LGBT. That's what's happening here, right? He's said mean stuff against them. The
Pope said the gays are fine. I thought the Pope said the gays are fine.
Well, not the Pope. I'm talking about Fünke.
Oh, Fünke? Fünke himself?
Fünke. In truly Orwellian fashion, the Liberal MP says she supports the value of free speech, but also that Fuchs values don't align with CBC Liberal values, and therefore the event needs to be shut down. I mean, this is mind-boggling. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. I have the utmost respect for the value. Here's her quote. I do not believe this event aligns with Parks Canada's core values and respect for people, equity, diversion, and inclusion, or integrity. According to Juno News, the CBC's smear campaign has led to events canceled in six cities across Eastern and Central Canada. I mean, this is just like the effect, the Streisand effect. I mean, as if he's not becoming super popular from all this pushback, trying to cancel the guy. That's the power of a CBC hit jog. So they canceled these outdoor events in Halifax, Charlottetown, Moncton, Gatineau, Quebec City, and Vaughan. Good job, people. Citing a vague public safety concern. Last weekend, he arrived in Montreal, and so did CBC. It intensified its propaganda. So we already talked about a lot of this. They decided you need a special permit to sing inside a church. They wanted the mayor of Montreal to issue a $2,500 fine to the church. A woke mob, aka loyal CBC readers, showed up to protest churchgoers in Montreal. Fuke thanked Montreal police, stating they warned him about it. Like. Yeah. Of course, that led to this viral exchange, and we played this last week, right, where he talks about the permit for a church and all that. We don't have to go through all that again. One of their radicalized followers took matters into his own hand and interrupted the service by throwing smoke bombs. Okay, we saw this. So CBC didn't cover this part, of course, since it's counter to their black and white worldview. Christians, Americans equals bad. All things woke equals good. Thankfully, there were real journalists in attendance. The Rebel caught the bomb throwing thug on tape. Reminder, this is a crime. Well, it's just interrupting church service is a crime. To recap, CBC. Isn't throwing
smoke bombs a crime? Are we allowed to throw smoke bombs around?
It's unbelievable.
It's information to me. If I'm allowed to throw smoke bombs, I would like to know that.
As if, imagine if you went into a mosque and threw a smoke bomb in a mosque. I mean, you'd be in jail. You'd get more than the convoy organizers. So to recap, CBC invented this controversy, urged local bureaucrats to deplatform Fuke, mobilized Antifa who committed crimes, ignored crimes committed because of their reporting, and now warning of censorship that came as a result of their activism. This is where things go from bad to worse for the CBC. Despite their deranged activism and blatant hypocrisy, many Canadians are rallying around Sean Fuke. The CBC does not like this one bit, so they accuse Fuke of, get this, capitalizing on the controversy. What else is he supposed to do? Ignore the dozens, yes, dozens of hit pieces the CBC has written against him, abandon his Canadian audience, turn away fans who are disgusted by CBC's activism? To say the CBC is obsessed with this guy is an understatement. Like, what the actual F? Search.cbc.ca, Sean Fuke filter. 1 to 10 of 822 items in the news. It's important to know that he's been touring in Canada for years with few people ever hearing about him until CBC started its campaign last week. And yes, it is backfiring on the woke activists. And Sean says here, this is my third year in a row of bringing lettuce worship to Canada. Never before has every major news outlet in the nation been talking about this. We need to deprogram our country from CBC propaganda and start thinking for ourselves again. Turn off the CBC and support independent media instead. Juno News is on a mission to replace the CBC. Help us by insurrection. Help us by subscribing and sharing with like-minded friends. More backfiring. Canadians now get slapped with visa restrictions thanks to CBC's anti-Christian, anti-American, anti-free speech bigotry. This was back from May with Rubio, but it could still apply. So there you go. And then meanwhile, on our actual government, have you seen this? That we have an Islamic caucus in government, in parliament.
That's nice.
Yeah. Started by the Trudeau Liberals, see below. As a reminder, there is no Christian caucus. Imagine the outrage for even suggesting that. We are not an effing Islamic country. So here it is. Federal and provincial governments are under an equal duty to maintain neutrality with respect to religion. Blah, blah, blah. There's your caucus. It turns out, let me just see here. It is interesting to discover how this flies in the face of a recent development endorsed by Justin. Turns out that a religious-based Islamic caucus has been established within Parliament. Interestingly, 99% of Canadians had never heard of this committee. The Liberals have kept this caucus well hidden. Actually, I think we did hear about it a while back, but this Muslim caucus consists of Liberal MPs, Al-Ghabra, Ahmed Hussein, Ikra Khalid, and others. They meet on a regular basis to address Muslim community issues. Imagine if Christians demanded a similar caucus within a Canadian political party. It would never be allowed. The white privilege card would be raised immediately. In this photo, a prayer is offered to Allah before the meal. Our Muslim PMs sit in front and center. Oh, there's Trudeau. I want a Christian caucus. I mean, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. I don't know. I mean, maybe they should have like these caucuses and committees for all the religions. I mean, maybe they should be allowed to do that. I don't know if I'm against it necessarily, but I do agree that, of course, if there was a Christian caucus, not when a leader is hell-bent on dividing Canadians, it would be a problem.
I agree.
Yeah. But I don't really... I don't know. I mean, is it a big deal, really? I mean, if people get together and do that, I mean, it's our fault that we've basically allowed them to come in and get elected. They're following the rules. They're getting elected. They're not even born in the country, and we somehow let it happen. So, I mean, how much of this could just be blamed on us as Canadians not fucking paying attention for decades?
Here we are,
right?
Yeah, there's definitely some of that.
You want me to take a break and play a guy who's ranting about the government corruption?
Sure.
All right. And we can see. I don't know how long you can tell me when you want me to stop playing it, but it's kind of a good little rant.
The Canadian government is so corrupt to the bone, it's disgusting. Recently, the government's website has updated offering 2SLGBTQ citizens from other countries, refugees, full expense paid first year in Canada. We as a country are offering to pay members of that community for an entire year, all expenses paid for them to live in Canada. At the same time, over 2 million Canadians are currently using food banks. That's a record in this country. Over 2 million Canadians are using food banks. Our GDP per capita has stagnated. A recent study showed that of 50 countries, Canada was dead last of all measured. And this is due to government policies. We live in a resource-rich country. There's no reason for Canada to be at the bottom of that list except for the past decade of Liberal leadership, ESG policies, all the junk that Trudeau and Carney, woke policies that hurt us economically but allow Carney and Trudeau to virtue signal, which incredibly still a large percentage of Canadians buy into. But serious question, how can we justify all expenses paid for members of other communities, refugees who have made no contribution to Canada, showing up here, in addition to this all expenses paid first year for members of the 2SLGBTQ community? We're offering up to $230 a day for immigrants. And at the same time, Canadians are starving. Canadians are starving. You walk through our streets. Anybody who's lived in Canada for their entirety of their life, There is zero chance in hell you can tell me this country has improved in the past decade.
Is that enough?
Yeah, that's probably good.
Yeah, it's going to be the same old rat. But I mean, interesting about the LGBT people. This is the other one I was trying to remember when I was talking about the government. This is that Market Mania guy. He's got some great rants, my God. 1 in 4 workers in Canada works for the government. That's over 4.5 million people living off taxpayers. Throw in a housing bubble and mass immigration, and there's not much real economy left. It's not sustainable. It's a slow motion collapse. Have you heard about the housing collapse in Ontario?
Only the condo.
Yeah.
Only the condo. So far, is the housing going now too?
Well, there's a couple people that sold their house for like $600,000 less than they were trying. They dropped their price by $600,000.
That's a hit.
2.7 million instead of 3.3, or was it 1.7 instead of 2.3, or something like that? Yeah. Well,
it's always the high end stuff that breaks first.
Yeah.
That's probably an indicator.
Yeah.
Is that it?
I guess that's it. Yeah. I mean, I could probably scrounge up some more stuff, but.
That's good for today. We can try again later in the week. Maybe we're back at it after some busy weeks. We didn't get a show out that 1 week, but we'll try and stick to 2 a week when we can. We appreciate you guys. a-list.ca. If you want to get it in podcast form or support us, or of course you can super chat on YouTube. You can become a member on YouTube. You can like, share, subscribe, comment. All that stuff helps us out as well. That's great. Check out grimerica.ca for other podcasts. Contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. grimericaoutloud.ca for controversial stuff. Adultbrain.ca for audiobooks. BigSkyTallow.ca for tallow. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.